Okay, so like she said, I'm going to talk about some recent Chandra observations of soft gamma repeaters, and they're turning out, as everything with Chandra is, to be pretty exciting and pretty interesting. Just the two soft gamma repeaters that we've had observations of so far, they've been discussed already, but I'll just go over them briefly. They're 0525, which had the enormous Mach 79 burst in the LMC, and it was known to have an 8-second periodicity during the burst. And the other one is 1806-20, which was thought to be associated with a supernova remnant. The quiescent X-ray source was fit with a photon index of 2.2. It had a 7.5-second periodicity, which is doing weird things now. And it has many bursts, whereas 0525 hasn't burst in about 15 years. And so like we've been hearing, the supernova remnant association is much, much more flaky now. And we have a little bit to say about that. Just to briefly, what observations we had. So for 0525, we had 30 kiloseconds in a hybrid mode of the ACES detector, where we were able to get some timing data out of it. And then we also have some HST with PIC2 data that we used to search for a possible optical counterpart or a remnant porion left by some previous explosion. For 1806, we have 5 kiloseconds with the full ACES detector. And I think that should actually be ACES-I. Then we have 30 kiloseconds with the ACES-S detector, again in a timing mode. And very fortuitously, this happened 2 days after one of its more recent bursts. And it looks like some pretty interesting things are happening there. I can't talk about them too much right now because we're still working on the data. But it looks like we'll be able to say something pretty interesting pretty soon.
You shouldn't have said that at all. You want to keep something classified. Don't say anything.
Oh, it's not for classification, just because I'm not sure of the numbers yet.
Yeah, can everybody ask you what it is you have in your back pocket?
So the first question I'll try to answer is, where is SGR-1806? And Kevin Hurley had tried to answer this before with his IPN fitting. And we find the result that's very, very consistent with there. This is a rough circle that I just put on there by eye last night. So I'll get a much better plot once I have all this straightened out on my computer. But the results are that it's within 2 arcseconds of the IPN position, and 2 arcseconds, I believe, are the quoted uncertainties on that position. And it's pretty much 15 arcseconds from the radio core. So I can say pretty confidently now that we can exclude identification of the radio core with SGR-1806. And obviously, if the radio core is not associated, we have to question the association of it with the supernova remnant in general. Next question I'll try to answer is, where is 0525? And this kind of comes at a different point. We know that it is superimposed on the on N49, the supernova remnant in the LMC. And so with our HST observations, we tried to search for an optical counterpart. And I'm not going to show the images here because they're non-detections. But we were able to place pretty strict limits. So these are the raw limits, and these are the deredened limits. And these are the points that we find from the X-ray spectrum. And so there's no real reason to do this, but we just tried to naively fit a power law continuation between these two. And the most obvious power laws to fit are something like with an index of 2 or 2.5, either from, say, thermal or synchrotron self-absorption or something like that. And so that's what we see is these two lines here. And if we do that, and we follow the continuation of this X-ray spectrum, we find that the spectrum peaks around the extreme ultraviolet. And that could be very interesting, because if you look at the top here, this is a plot of nu s nu. This peaks at somewhere around the factor of 10 above the X-ray energy. So that could be saying that we thought these had luminosities of 10 to 35, 10 to the 36 ergs per second. And what we could be seeing is that the actual luminosity is maybe a factor of 10 times that, but we haven't been able to see it because of the inefficiency of UV detectors compared to the other bands. And I also have on here obviously it's related to that. So then I also have on here a prediction based on recent observations of Martens and Ferdi-Hulemans of an AXP. And so it says that these power law fits were made to pass through their points, which is extrapolated from their data. And they'll talk more about that, I believe, tomorrow. But it says that we might actually be able to see the counterpart of this. The other SGRs are right in the galactic plane, they're very heavily obscured. This one only has about a magnitude and a half of extinction. The others have somewhere upwards of 10 magnitudes of extinction. So this is really the only one we have a chance of seeing. And just to briefly flash up the image to show you what it looks like, this is the supernova remnant. And you can barely see on here my hand-drawn error box from the original gamma ray observations. And so we see that the quiescent X-ray source is right at the edge of that error box. I can't say for certain which side of the line it's on right now, because there's still some systematic uncertainties there. And just for publicity purposes, here's a nice but backwards image of the supernova remnant from HSC. It's just a really, really interesting region. Very, very asymmetric. I believe it's bounded by a molecular cloud over here that's stopping the expansion and stuff like that. So there are a couple other questions we can try to answer. How big are they? We see that both sources are unresolved with Chandra. And so that says on the scale of, say, a third of an arc second or so, we can see no residual synchrotron nebula from any of their previous emission. We can also, with ACES, we can get a bit of timing information. With SGR-1806, we find a strong periodicity. And like Peter Woods mentioned, it follows this continuation of anomalous spin down from the previous spin down. For 0525, we see a marginal detection of an 8-second periodicity. What we actually find is a 4-second periodicity. But like you saw in some of those burst profiles, the pulse profile is very highly modulated with interpulses and stuff like that. So our interpretation right now is that we're seeing the interpulse located 180 degrees away from the main pulse. And this is, right now, it's around a 3.5 sigma result. We will try to confirm this with Chandra observations next year. The most interesting thing so far is what their spectra are like. So 0525, the best fits are either a pure power law fit or a combined power law black body fit. The black body is not very well constrained because of the soft energies. There's a lot of absorption in that prevents us from fitting a black body of between 0.5 and 1 keV. But we can, it is statistically acceptable. And we find that the power law index is 3.2, which, as Krista was stressing, is pretty interesting. I'll show you that in a bit. If we fit a power law and black body, we get essentially the same power law index with a 0.5 keV black body that contributes somewhere around 5% of the overall flux. And we'll also look at that in a bit, too. For 1806, again, a pure black body is rejected. We can fit it either with a pure power law or a power law and black body combined. The two different observations that we have, one before the burst, one after the burst, have significantly different flux levels and very likely significantly different spectra. That is what we're working to quantify now. But if we do indeed see the spectrum changing before and after the burst, that could, as they saw for SGR-1900, that could show some sign of magnetic field reconfiguration or something similar. But we'll have to answer that more quantitatively later. And so if we do include, so the power law index we find varies between 1.5 and 1.9, depending on the specific model. And if we include a black body component, it's around 0.65 keV. The radii for the black body are both around, for both sources are, I believe, around 2 to 3 kilometers. Although the distances are highly uncertain, so it's not very well constrained. And again, we can't really say too much about the black body because there's a whole lot of absorption there. So now we're going to look at this a bit. I'm plotting some luminosities here. For SGRs, the luminosities are not all that well determined. I didn't even plot error bars because there are so many factors that go into them. But I'm just trying to get a schematic sense for how the SGR population compares to the AXP population. And so I plotted up here, this is a plot of photon index gamma versus the total X-ray luminosity. And the AXPs are the crosses, the green circles are the SGR observations with Chandra, and the red triangles are the previous SGR observations. And so we see that, yes, most of these SGRs have a power law index between 1 and 2.5 or so, and most of the AXPs have a power law index of 3 or greater. SGR-0525 sits right in the middle. We don't see any clear separation based on X-ray luminosity, but there does appear, and this line was drawn by hand, but there does appear to be some sort of a separation that we can place in there just based on the power law. And if this is the case, with SGR-0525 straddling the gap along with this AXP here, it may be that we're seeing some sort of transition object between the classes of SJRs and AXPs. If we look at the bottom plot down here, again, this one is, I'm plotting two luminosity, so it's even more uncertain. But we look at the, this is the total X-ray luminosity. And this is, if you fit it with a dual component power law and black body spectrum, this is the luminosity that comes out in the black body bit. And you see that while this part keeps going up, this part appears to kind of be turning over a bit. And what we think is happening there is that the black body is due to thermal emission from the neutron star surface. And as you heat it up more and more, you'd expect to get more emission. But what happens is because of a strong magnetic field, as the magnetic field strength increases, which would also likely lead to heating, you change the photon opacities, and so you can cool more effectively. And so that way, it's kind of saturating the black body intensity up here when the magnetic field strength gets slightly higher. And this is stuff that we're still working on and thinking about, but it looks like it could be an intriguing result. So then just to summarize what's going on here, the overall spectrum may peak in the UV, and that may be similar to what's happening with the anomalous X-ray pulsars. And that tells us not only that the power law dominates the spectrum, but that the energetics may be a little more constrained than we previously thought, maybe 10 to 37 ergs that we have to explain instead of 10 to 36. Another thing that I'd like to stress is that if we observed 0525 now, we think it was an AXP or maybe even a radio quiet neutron star. We see a steep power law spectrum, possible pulsations, and an association with the supernova remnants. No bursts to suggest SJR activity. So this is saying that this is very likely a transition object between the two classes, and we have to investigate this further. Another thing that these observations talk about is whether the SNR-SJR associations are real. We see that for 1806, they're not. For 0525, it certainly is superimposed upon the position of the supernova remnants, but that could be chance superposition, although the hydrogen column densities of the two sources agree, so they're likely at around the same distance. But that's obviously uncertain. And so something we've been kicking around is that the power law emission that we're seeing is from a tangled magnetic field, which has lots of small-scale structure, whereas the black body is from the surface. So the photon index describes how the B field is arranged, and we're seeing a progression of arrangement from the SJRs through 0525 to the AXPs. The black body flux looks like it's saturating as the magnetic field gets higher, and the burst may be changing the spectrum. And I guess I'll stop there.
Finished on time. Questions? Brian.
One of you can answer this question, but I seem to recall a AAAS presentation a few years ago of observations of the M49 for soft gamma repeater with some suggestion of X-ray modulations in flux or anything like that. What's the current thought on that? Is anything you've seen like that?
Yeah. Well, we only have one observation with Chandra. We will have another soon.
No, Brian's talking about ROSAT stuff.
No, I know. I'm saying we could make our own constraints.
Yeah.
But
Rudy Danner's thesis. Yeah, it's there. I mean, it's just, you know. No, it's pretty good. There are 12 observations spaced 1 month apart with ROSAT. And there's a 25-30% change, which is very clear. It's not, this is no one, I mean, the only published record so far is Rudy in Rudy's thesis.
Pardon? The light curve, the change, does it look periodic at all?
Well, the only 12 points, and yeah, it looks like, you know, the period is about, if my memory is right, about 100 days or so.
So how many periods would be like one cycle?
Total of either two or four cycles, because I don't remember some. So, you know, I don't want to call it periodicity. Krista.
The very last point you made in your summary is a question whether the burst changes the spectrum.
I don't want to get into this too much. It looks like that we're seeing a possible black body component emerge after the spectrum, as you saw for 1900, after the burst.
In the persistent emission,
yes.
What about before?
Before we have less data, so it's hard to constrain it. I want to be careful, and I don't want to get anybody too excited about this. It looks like there's something very interesting there, but I guess Shree frowns upon me, but I like it.
Yeah, Rob.
I just wanted to ask, you've got now these upper limits in optical HST. Potentially, that could give you the strongest limits on this month.
Right.
Because you've got such small distinction.
Right.
There were predictions in AXP models, and this looks like an AXP when it's not bursting. Can you comment on how that, whether or not you can rule out those models?
We haven't done that quantitatively yet. We certainly hope to do that. That is
focus. Martin will be addressing this.
Of a paper that we're working on now.
And bottom line is you can actually rule it out, but he'll address in greater detail. Because you have to understand the modeling details. Any other questions?